Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It's been a weird morning. Our guest today, the wonderful, awesome, always awesome Ida Rodriguez joins us once again. How's it going, Ida?
It's going well. You know, it's funny because all I see from your shirt is says hate. And I'm like,
oh, sorry. No, it's hate is a virus. It's a,
I was like, I think, say, yeah, 2020 of you.
No, I don't. Damn, that's unfortunate, actually. Anyway, just trying to stop some of the xenophobia that came about as a result of the pandemic. Anyway, so we were talking before the show, and I think it's safe to say that both of us are, like, it comes and goes, but feeling the pandemic a bit. Is that accurate?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's been, I had to go yesterday. We took a mental health day and just go out and feel some fresh air and just restore our faith in science and in nature. It was just, it's been a tough time. All of us are feeling it. If you're out there and you feel it, that we're feeling it too. Everybody's feeling it. We're just having to deal with it the best way that we can, because that's just reality, right?
Yeah, you know, and it sucks to not be able to go out and do everything you want, but like you can find little things. Like yesterday during work, I walked around the neighborhood for a little bit. And I saw a cat. I tried to get the cat to come over. It was like a 15-minute process, and that cat never came near me. But I felt a little bit more in touch with nature as a result of that. That cat was having nothing to do with me. But anyway, I used to be really good at getting cats to come over.
He was social distancing.
Exactly. Like, oh, that's a good point, actually. Animals could potentially get it, maybe. So maybe it was for the best, for that cat's sake. But anyway, I'm very glad to have you here. I know we're going to be talking about a lot in the course of the next hour, including the launching of the Capitol riot hearings. We're going to talk a little bit about CPAC, but just a little bit. That's as much as anyone should talk about CPAC. We've got updates on the fight to raise the minimum wage, and then a bunch of conservatives whining about the vaccine and all of that. Oh, and gender reveal parties. Did they go well? Did they go horribly? Who's to say? You'll have to wait and find out. But anyway, for those of you who are already here, thank you for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know that we're active. And as we go through, we're going to be reading and responding to your comments. So feel free to send us tweets and super chats and comments on Twitch and all of that. With that, Ida, are you ready to jump into this thing?
Let's go.
Let's do it. Okay. We've been wanting answers on the attack of January 6th on the Capitol, and maybe they're coming a little bit closer. At the very least, there is a hearing going on. And what do you know? They're bringing in witnesses proving that you can do that. You can actually hear from the people who experienced January 6th. Isn't that a novel idea to give new perspective on what happened? My, maybe they should have thought about doing that for the impeachment trial, but I guess they were too busy. I don't know. But anyway, they've got this public inquest that's begun. We have four law enforcement officials, three of whom resigned their posts, some of whom have never before spoken publicly about the attack. They're going to be answering questions. Three of those officials, former US Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, former Senate Sergeant at Arms and doorkeeper Michael Stenger, and former House Sergeant at Arms Paul Irving, resigned in the immediate wake of the attack. Also being questioned is Metropolitan Police Department Acting Chief Robert Conti. His agency provided backup for the Capitol Security Force that was overrun by the pro-Trump mob. And we're going to have more on this, Ida. But just first of all, I do think it's interesting both that, as I sort of joked about, hey, look, witnesses are a good thing. They now seem to accept that. But also, it's a reminder that, like, everything that happened on the 6th was somebody's fault or different people's fault. These three officials resigned, seeming to imply that they were responsible, but nobody who was instigating the mob or anything like that has suffered any consequences. These three officials are apparently more responsible than the people who organized the event, Trump who sent them to the Capitol, and all of that.
Yeah, that's so very American. As I call it, the people below the line, I've been using these Hollywood terms that I think are applicable when we talk about our government, because the people who are at the elite, who are at the top, who belong to the elite class, are, you know, absolved of all of their crimes and them being compliant in this horrible act. I mean, I think when they call it riots, it pisses me off because I think that it minimizes what it is. People lost their lives. This is not like the white boys who go crazy when Michigan loses. Like this is, people have actually lost their lives. And you know, there were threats on the life of the Vice President of the United States. You know, some of our senators, it was terror. And I'm not surprised by how it's being handled. I think that this is what you and I and those of us who believe in and being progressive talk about constantly. Our government is out of control. They are, you know, they are not the government. The government is the corporations in the United States of America who are running the country. And you know, these people, these puppets who are in Washington, they get away with everything because they got friends in high places with a lot of money. So now you're gonna see the people who don't make a lot of money, the people who got caught up in this mass hysteria of white supremacy that were tricked into going down there and laying down the line, they're all gonna pay the price. While Ivanka, Eric, Donald Jr., Donald, and all of those people that were a part of that, you know, that heist are gonna continue to make money off of these people who are paying the price. Yeah. That's how it's always been.
Yeah, and well, like in theory, these hearings are an opportunity to really make clear what happened and who was responsible. And that's important in the context of since January 6th up to and including last night's cable news shows. There are people still trying to gaslight people about what happened on the 6th. Tucker Carlson is still saying there was no evidence there was any white supremacists. White supremacists had nothing to do with it. It wasn't an insurgency. It wasn't anything. And I love hearing that from a guy that had they gone in and executed every Democrat, he'd be saying, well, look, it's a tragedy, but that's the situation. I guess Republicans are in charge of everything. Him now because they lost, implying that it was nothing. So all of that's been going on. But this moment where we could really make clear to America what happened is going to be at least partially wasted. Because in that room where the questions are taking place, you have people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and Cindy Hyde Smith and others who did the electoral equivalent, or I guess the elected official equivalent of that insurgency. They voted to invalidate votes. They're gonna be asking questions. Ted Cruz was photographed just like browsing on his phone. He was just bored. He didn't care about what was going on. Ron Johnson is saying that the 6th was about agitators on both sides because they're still trying to pretend that it was Antifa that was doing it. And so we have a ridiculous sham of a government. And unfortunately, that touches on all of this. Like impeachment became this ridiculous joke because we've got such idiots in office. This is gonna be a joke because there's people like Ted Cruz wanted to overturn the election. He has no interest whatsoever in the American people understanding what happened on the 6th. And he's gonna do whatever's necessary to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that it's the greatest hustle, right? We've experienced the greatest hustle in the last 5 years. 5 to 6 years, they have convinced the American people, a portion of the American people, that people who fight against fascism are bad. They've convinced people that black people screaming for their humanity, that Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization because it's terroristic to white people who don't want to give up their privilege to have to share with people who are just asking for basic humanity and rights. It's the greatest hustle. They've convinced poor people to pay for $30 hats and wear merchandise to support a president of the United States. People who don't have all their teeth in their mouth because they don't have good healthcare and a good dental plan, buying hats and merchandise that belong to billionaires. They've convinced people to aspire, to believe that they too will be a billionaire and fight for capitalism in a way that is unheard of when they don't even have the proper education to start a business because the education system in this country is gone to shit. So when you think about the heist, this whole hustle that's happened in the last 5 years, which has been in the making for a long time, and you listen to people like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity and many others on all sides of the aisle, follow the money and then you'll see who's paying those people and why they're robots, you know, spewing these talking points that support the status quo, that keep poor people down and keep people, you know, in the places where they need to be so that they can be controlled. So I'm not at all surprised about anything that's happening in this, because this has been going on for a long time and they've been preparing us for this.
Well, the keeping poor people down is going to be a theme of the show. We're going to be talking about the fight over the minimum wage a little bit later on. Look, there's other nonsense that they've been spewing. I'm sure that there's going to be even more after today's show. So we're going to stop on this subject for now. We'll get it all together for tomorrow.
You got to like come more the trauma.
It's more of them saying like, you know what? What did Pelosi know and when did she know it? Did she bring in the people that were trying to hunt her down and kill her?
Right. No, that's just
shut up. God, our country sucks so hard.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
CPAC is this weird thing in American politics. It's like Comic-Con for the most insane right-wingers every year. To give an idea of how ridiculous it can be, last February, CPAC featured then-President Donald Trump groping an American flag as he gave himself an A++ grade for his handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
Everything is under control.
Turned out not to be the case, 500,000 American deaths later. The 2020 conference also featured a prankster disguised as Trump interrupting Vice President Mike Pence. That turned out to be Sacha Baron Cohen, who was filming for his secret Borat sequel. And also, last year's CPAC happened in February, when everybody knew that the pandemic was starting to happen and might hit the US. And what do you know? People got COVID at CPAC. So that's not going to stop them from having it again. And this year, they don't want all of that ridiculousness of last year. They want to be serious, ideological. It is about conservative philosophy. And the theme of this year is America uncanceled. They tried to cancel our votes, our voices, and our values. Our rallying cry for 2021 is that hashtag America uncanceled. Except for the people that they're canceling, because they also tweeted yesterday, "We have just learned that someone we invited to CPAC has expressed reprehensible views that have no home with our conference or our organization. The individual will not be participating at our conference." Now, Ida, I don't know how familiar you are with this individual that they canceled. They were right to. This is a whack job. But before we give the evidence about this individual and the things they've said, what do you think about CPAC on the one hand saying, "We're gonna stand up to cancel culture," and then they had to cancel someone?
They're always canceling people. They always cancel people who don't, whose views don't are not in agreement with what they believe in, and that is what a lot of cancel culture has become. And so for me, it's like I did panels with these people at Politicon, and They want to be able to say mean stuff. They want to say disrespectful stuff. They want to say oppressive stuff without consequences, right? We did a panel on comedy, and I sat next to this weirdo, you know, nerdy incel type dude that all he did was talk about Hannah Gadsby and was so furious that she had a special on Netflix, and he was like just very upset about it. And I was like, don't watch it. If you don't like it, don't watch it. Watch it. Those of us who are women see endless male comedians, white boys talking about their sex and all lower thirds comedy, and we just don't watch it. I don't ask for it to be canceled. I just think that it's interesting that they like to cancel stuff when it just doesn't line up with the stuff that they want, that they are their program. But then they get upset when you tell them don't make fun of disabled people.
Exactly. Yeah, and I have so many frustrations about what the conversation about cancel culture has become. Like, it might have at one point been a certain thing, but now it's whatever the right wants. And what I've always said is, all that canceling actually is trying to make it so that people know who a person is, pointing out what they've said or done, and letting people decide based on that what they want to do. Having consequences for words and actions is not a new thing that was developed when someone came up with the term canceling. That is always what we've had, and that is what the right wants too. They just have come up with a way that they criticize people in the left or the center constantly, but that isn't canceling, because canceling now is just what the whole PC conversation was back in the 90s. It is, you are doing it if you are criticizing a conservative. Conservatives criticizing other people, that's just a free speech and open conversation. But when the left or the center does it, then it's an actual problem. And you said, you know, they don't want consequences, but they also, like, consequences can mean a lot of things. They don't even want criticism. Yeah. So, like, they say it's about consequences, but they really don't want criticism. But even that isn't actually honest, because a lot of them like having the sort of mantle of I've been canceled. That is a thing that makes you more popular on the right. So they say they don't want consequences when what they really mean is any pushback. But even when they get the pushback, that can honestly be a good thing for many of these people. The entire thing is just so fundamentally dishonest from top to bottom, when really all it is what we've always had. People get angry sometimes when you say or do reprehensible things, and they are fully within their rights to do that.
Yeah, and you know what, when it comes to cancel culture, the term that's been hijacked by so many people to, you know, make comments to really like berate younger people like the millennials and stuff with the intention of saying that they're weaker and they're not as strong as the older generation, that they can't take a joke or they can't. So for me, you know, as a stand-up comedian, I'm subject to cancel culture all the time. I don't there are people on the left who are also obnoxious when it comes to canceling, because it comes from a very self-centered place. It comes from privilege. It comes from a lot of people feeling that you can't say anything to attack them, but they can laugh at everybody else, right? So I've encountered it from a lot of people, and I just think that when people hijack the term, is usually because they want to say messed up stuff about people. Because I get canceled, I don't care, because I know that my intentions are not to be hurtful and to berate people. When I say something that's offensive and that's wrong, I'm able to say, oh, I understand why that was offensive. I apologize for that. Not a big deal. I don't live in that. But they've just hijacked this cancel culture thing and built a whole platform on it.
Yeah.
Because it's just people want to be able to oppress others, and they don't want to be accountable for it.
Yeah. And see, look, you actually like, you care about learning and making sure that you're, you know, staying up to date with what's going on in people's concerns. A lot of the people on the right are using the term now, like they will say, you know, it's ridiculous for instance, a trans person to be sensitive about attacks against the trans community. That's crazy. Why would you be so focused on that? And yet that person saying that, who's almost certainly Christian, are they like really cool with people criticizing Christianity?
Yeah.
No. No, they want that to be protected. And again, that's why I say it's the politically correct conversation all over again. All those people, all the conservatives in the 90s who were talking about PC culture were not cool with criticisms of Christianity. That's just not a thing. It's just always been so one-sided. But anyway, let's talk about this individual. So CPAC has canceled one of the people that they were going to bring in to speak. It is believed to be this individual, Young Pharaoh, who's going to speak there and has been removed from CPAC. Yeah. So who is Young Pharaoh? It's an online commentator who has told followers that Judaism is a complete lie and made up for political gain. Like the whole religion is made up. He said that Jewish people are thieving fake Jews, tweeted that all the censorship and pedophilia on social media is being done by Israeli Jews, and claimed that all of these big tech companies, media, and social media platforms are controlled by the CCP and Israel through Jewish CEOs and corrupt Democrats. And so to give you an example of some of the individual things. Now, in CPAC's defense, it would have been hard for them to track this stuff down because they would have had to go to his Twitter account, which they linked to on their page for tweets like this in all caps. And from what I've seen, all of his tweets are in all caps. There is no historical or scientific evidence proving the existence of Jews or Judaism. It's a complete lie. Go get the best Jewish scholar you can find and I'll expose religion as being completely made up for political gain. So that's something. He's also attacked Ben Shapiro for being Jewish, or I guess being fake Jewish, since apparently it's not a real thing. Tweeting, Ben Shapiro, heard you're a Jew. You man enough to take this debate and get destroyed. He's also, of course, promoted QAnon and Pizzagate. He said that coronavirus vaccines will alter your DNA. Just whatever conspiracy theory you want, there's a good chance this guy has tweeted in all caps about it. So Ida, what do you think? Did they go too far? Should they have given this guy a chance?
You know what's funny is that the right has been very anti-Semitic. This is, you know, when they pick and choose. I mean, Donald Trump has been anti-Semitic, and people always say, well, his son-in-law, but he has been anti-Semitic. You can be married to someone that's Jewish or black and be anti-Semitic or racist, anti-black. I don't understand where these people stand at some points, because it's very interesting to me that they teeter back and forth between what type of racism is cool with them. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's interesting. I mean, this person obviously sounds more than, they sound unstable. You know, like it just sounds like a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, rooted in hate. But it just seems, that's what happens when people get radicalized, right? These are the outcomes when you continuously feed the subconscious mind messaging that is anti a group of people. And it manifests in different ways. So just like those people with that, with the flag that was at the Capitol, the terrorists that were at the Capitol, that were with the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
They have certain beliefs, right? And so then they want to back away from the people that they have radicalized. They're like, oh no, you took it too far. Well, what is the messaging that you're sending? What are you saying? Why do you think Asian people are getting beat up? You know, why do you think people are pushing back on Black Lives Matter, saying Black Lives Matter is a terrorist communist organization? Why do you think people are, you know, saying anti-Semitic stuff? Why do you think that is? Because your messaging is about, it is always attacking anybody who is not white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant. That's it. And that's where it comes from. So now you're surprised when it takes life in all these other directions. That's what you set the foundation for that. Why are you criticizing the plant from growing? You sprinkle all the fertilizer in the last 4 years on all this stuff, and now you're surprised that these are the fruits. These are the fruits of the trees that you've laid down. And my analogy may not be great, but no, you know what good. I'm talking.
Yeah, and you're surprised that this guy is crazy? Like, what? First of all, why were you bringing him in the first place? Like, usually what happens is we take this person, we find out, oh, at one point they said something. But that's this guy's Twitter account. That's just all it is these things. So when you say on the website, CPAC says he's a philosopher, scholar, musician, and links to his Twitter account. They also linked to his website, which features his videos spreading conspiracy theories about vaccines and the New World Order. So what was the thing that made you like him for this to then make you not like him?
I got it. What's that? I'll tell you what it is. He went too far, right? When he made the anti-Semitic, he's black, right? Mm-hmm. And so they always want to get black people who support their talking points. They didn't do the research. They were like, oh, he supports this. He supports this. This is part of our program. Nobody did a deep dive into what Young Pharoah was talking about, because Young Pharoah's been talking about this stuff for a while. He didn't just start talking about this in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
So they thought, look, we got a black person. We got a black one here. So this black one is with our program. They do that with all of the minorities. That when they're being accused of being racist, they always push the minorities who support their agenda to the front line. They always do that. So yeah, they thought that this dude, they didn't realize, nobody did a deep dive. You know why? Because these people don't read and they don't do research. Here you
That's
go.
That's true. I might disagree slightly.
Okay.
I think there's a very good chance that what you described is what's actually happening. But I think there's a chance that they just didn't think anyone would point it out. And that it was only when people started to be like, hey, this guy's absolutely insane, they're like, okay, fine, we'll cancel him. But like,
well, you thought they were okay with all that stuff he was saying.
Every conspiracy theory is like, it's like fondant on a cake. You don't know what's under that cake, it might be nothing. It could be beef, you don't know. That's the conspiracy theory. But what's under the conspiracy theory? Every conspiracy theory is anti-Semitism at the end of the day. Maybe it's two layers of fondant. Maybe it's like Bill Gates is putting the vaccine in your blood, and that's to track your location, and that's so that he can then sell something, and then it's the Jews. It's always the Jews at the end of the day. That's how every conspiracy theory works. And so you don't get to be shocked that when you bring in conspiracy theorists, they turn out to be anti-Semites. That's what it is. And the thing is, they're not canceling him because he's spreading conspiracy theories. And by the way, when I say every conspiracy theory, I mean it. He's posted videos about Hillary Clinton ripping the faces off of babies and eating their faces after raping them. Black people have alien DNA, George Floyd conspiracy theories, everything. But that isn't the issue, because their whole roster is election conspiracy theories and stuff about that. He just kind of went too far with the anti-Semitic stuff, and maybe especially the specifically attacking Ben Shapiro thing, because then it becomes a thing where Ben Shapiro will be attacking him. And honestly, I think CPAC cares a lot more about a right winger like Ben Shapiro criticizing them than a whole bunch of leftists who are never going to go to CPAC anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you have a point there. I agree. I think all of that. And you know, there's no, you've seen it with them, Diamond and Silk, you know, the sheriff, the lunatic sheriff. It's always the twins, Herschel Walker's son. And it's so funny because these people can be so toxic. You know, they're anti-gay, they're anti-trans, they're anti-black. They're anti-immigration and immigrants. They're anti-everyone until those people speak their talking points. And then they welcome them, and then they create these groups.
Yeah.
Gays for Trump, Latinx for Trump. But it's so funny because, I mean, those of us from the community, we see this and we know what it is, because they need people who look like us to justify what they do to us by to say the things that they want them to say. And that it's gross.
Yeah, there's nothing a racist wants more than a black person to say that racism is right. There's nothing a misogynist wants more than for a woman to tell them that women are awful. Like, and you can make a lot of money doing that. Anyway, by the way, as you pointed out, there was Gays for Trump as an organization. But also, it wasn't that long ago in our comments, I forget, I don't know if it was Bart that put it down or if it was Edwin, but CPAC disinvited the Log Cabin Republicans back in 2015. Because sure, they're conservatives and Republicans, and they agree with Republicans on everything, except they're also gay, so you're canceled. That's basically what happened. So we're now like week five of the effort to raise the minimum wage. It's gonna, they're attempting to put it into the COVID relief bill. That is something that Bernie Sanders and others have been working hard to do. But there's a number of obstacles to that, both sort of structural, procedural obstacles like the reconciliation rules. And that apparently isn't going to stop it from being put in because it does have a budget impact. But there are other obstacles, and some of them are politicians and not all of them are Republicans. So according to a reporter for CNN, Joe Manchin, key Democratic swing vote, told him that he would try to amend the COVID relief package with federal minimum wage hike to $11 an hour, a move he argues will allow the party to get behind a compromise with many Dems pushing $15. But he is one of only like two that are saying it has to be 11. So you can't say, well, give me what I want and that will allow a compromise. No, that's just the thing that you want. That is, at the very least, is the compromise, not, that doesn't bring us closer to it. And bear in mind, Joe Manchin supported a $10 minimum wage like 5 years ago. And he thinks after half a decade, you get $1 more. Maybe $1 more. 15 is crazy. $1 more. I mean, that's what would work in West Virginia, he says. So everyone else who doesn't live in West Virginia can go screw themselves and be happy with the $11 that he might be willing to approve of. So we'll have more, including other politicians, Ida. But what do you think about the current state of this battle over the minimum wage?
You know, it's what I said last time and I stand by what I said. And a lot of people say that I try to incite violence and I don't. I'm just actually speaking realistically about the evolution of man and what happens to human beings when they're up against the wall. The poor will eventually eat the rich. They can't continue to do this to people and think that it will go without consequence. People are backed up against the wall in this moment. We're dealing with racial strife. We're dealing with a pandemic. We're dealing with economic struggle. We're dealing with people who are undocumented being afraid to go to the doctor because of the consequences and how poorly we treat immigrants in this country when they need our help, and how, as opposed to how we treat them when we need their help. So I think that it, all of it is connected. And we think that one thing, the minimum wage is just this, you know, this thing that is unique and all by itself. No, it's all connected. It's connected to healthcare. It's connected to the education system. It's connected to the quality of our food. You can't get good quality food, produce and meat unless you buy it from Whole Foods. You can't afford Whole Foods. So when you keep saying, you keep these people, you know, parading and they are so negligent with the American people that they have these conversations out loud with reckless abandon and no consideration for what the people are going through right now. They don't realize the psychological effect that it has on human beings. Yeah. And eventually people will revolt because they're gonna want, they have to feed their children. It is the nature of the beast. So keep playing with minimum wage, keep playing with healthcare while you have the best of it all. He doesn't have to worry about minimum wage because he doesn't have to worry about getting paid it. He has a healthcare that is provided with the job that he has that is also provided by taxpayer dollars. How he misappropriates the funds of the people of the state that he works for is he's not being held accountable for. And eventually people without even understanding what's happening are going to react because you can't just keep doing people like this. And I said what I said, I'm not gonna take it back.
Yeah, I don't know how you win a primary or a general election when someone can write an ad saying, we had this opportunity for people to make $15 an hour. And he was one of the lone voices saying, no,
yeah,
I am not going to allow it. That wage is too high. Screw those people. They can make do with 11 or maybe 10, or maybe I tank the whole thing and it stays where it's been for literally decades. Maybe that's okay. And yet he does win re-election. And I agree, I think that people will wake up, but one of the things that slows it down is that the poor have been trained for centuries to either be distracted from their own economic concerns by being focused on hating black or brown people or Muslim people or Asian people or whatever. And also told that anybody trying to improve your economic situation is a bigger threat to you than poverty. That there's something suspect about a person wanting to raise your wages or get you health insurance or whatever, that unions are some sort of scam against you. And the propaganda against the minimum wage as well, we're seeing that again now with this conversation happening nationally. But let's also bear in mind, it isn't just Joe Manchin. And in fact, in this case, Joe Manchin isn't even the worst Democrat, because Kristen Sinema doesn't, as of right now, support any wage hike being part of COVID aid. Now, that doesn't mean that she won't support raising the minimum wage maybe at some other point that wouldn't be passed through reconciliation and thus theoretically would just be filibustered. But she says that any increase isn't appropriate as an add-on to the COVID aid bill. That aid during a pandemic, it doesn't make sense that people should get more money as a result of that aid.
The ultimate Karen. And you know, let me just say this. It is with great sadness that we have to accept the fact that Americans have been conditioned to believe that they're not worthy of receiving help, because that implicates that they are lazy and less than the people who've had privilege and have access to great things like education and healthcare. And they have constantly conditioned poor people into believing that they're not worthy, that they're gonna be subject to the ridicule and criticism of the people who have privilege in this country. And so and then our government supports that. And you have these dummies going around saying, well, I pay for my student loans. If I paid for my student loans, that is the same, those are the same pull yourself up by your bootstrap talking points. Why would you not want it there? You got hustled. You paid for an education and got out of education with debt and can't get a job. Like it's amazing the way that they have, it's all part of this hustle. And so when we talk about minimum wage, they're always throwing poor people at poor people to justify doing bad things to poor people. Well, the small businesses are gonna suffer if the minimum wage goes up. Malarkey. You know what I'm saying? Stop with this already. People, wake up for you bite your nose to spite your face. Listen, if you hate us, if you hate black and brown people, we don't wanna be your friend. We don't wanna live in your house. We don't wanna marry your daughters. Well, some of us do, but I don't. So listen, that my thing is, you can hate us, but you're biting your nose to spite your face, because these government officials that you keep employing and allowing to misappropriate your funds are damaging the quality of your life, not us. So we just want good healthcare. We want good education. We want what's rightfully ours based on all the labor that all of our ancestors put in to make this country better, right? And I speak also on behalf of Puerto Rico, because I am the descendant of slaves there, and Puerto Rico is part of the United States. So, but these people that are like fighting for all of against the stuff that improves their own lives because they hate us, we're not trying to take what's yours. We want what's rightfully ours. But you a dummy, because you've fallen for this foolishness that they're telling you, and it is ruining the quality of your own life. And they're just giving you an enemy to believe that that enemy is what's harming you. But what's harming you is these people you keep voting for.
Yeah. By the way, I saw in the chat, someone said, malarkey, Ida, this is a family show. Yeah. Well, look, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, if they get their way, there's either not gonna be a minimum wage increase in the COVID aid bill, or it will be kept to $11. But I don't want you to leave this show thinking that the Republicans don't care, because they've got a plan too. Mitt Romney and Tom Cotton have just rolled out their plan to raise the federal minimum wage to $10 an hour 5 years from now. But in exchange for that, they want mandatory e-verify for employers and stricter penalties for hiring people here illegally or without documentation. So that's sort of awful in two ways. Obviously, all of the additional regulations and all that, the continued demonization of undocumented community and all that. But I'm not even talking about that. It's only $2.50 more than the current. It would take 5 years to get there. But what's also awful is Joe Manchin is only $1 better than the Republicans at this point. Like, how many elections have the Democrats had to win to get control? In 2018, in special elections, congressional elections in 2020, the presidency, winning both the runoffs in Georgia. And after all of that, if it's up to Joe Manchin, and if Kristen Sinema acts right, you get maybe $1 more than you would with the Republicans. How sad is that? Now, obviously, he's different than the other Democrats. A lot of Democrats in favor of $15. Many, especially congressional, would be in favor of more than that. But what a ridiculous thing. Like Mitt Romney, he's the reasonable one, and he wants you to make $10 someday, maybe.
You know, I've never, people criticized me because when I said I can't support someone whose beliefs just in the last 20 years, right up until believed that I wasn't eligible to go to heaven because of the color of my skin. So I don't understand what connection. I know people like to say Mitt Romney is one of the good ones. Mitt Romney is a man of age. So up until he was a grown up, his belief said that black people were not eligible to go to heaven based on being a Mormon, right? So I don't understand why people feel so connected to these politicians, because one day they do something that's right. I am not surprised that anyone who's elite, anyone who lives a life that is disconnected with the realities of being a working class person in this country, is ever going to be able to understand why we need a living wage. Whereas someone like AOC, which is constantly demonized while she continues to fight for the people, and she makes mistakes because she is just a human being like everybody else and shouldn't be held to a higher standard because she's a woman or a minority. But she did work a job where she understood how bad it is out there and how you cannot make a living without having a decent wage. So when she speaks from that place of understanding and empathy, and because she lived it. But these people who are disconnected, who've been grandfathered into politics, that people who have come from privilege and wealth and the elite, they are looking at us like we are little rats on a wheel. They don't care about us. So while you can deliberate, you can sit down and have a meeting as to the people who show up for you with votes and their tax dollars, should they have a living wage? And you can still sit back and say, you know what, a carton of milk is $5 and organic eggs are $6 at Whole Foods. So that's $13. You have to work more than an hour to be able to get eggs and milk of quality for your family. And they can sit around and deliberate if you are worthy of that. You need to reevaluate where you're putting your dollars in your pocket.
Especially if you like Mitt Romney are worth maybe, I mean, these net worth things are always a bit loose, but maybe as much of $250 million. And like to go back to a point you made earlier, when I see a guy worth $250 million say, oh, I have a fabulous idea. I think they should make $10 an hour. I think about your thing about eating the rich and I think, get the bread, get the cheese, Mitt Romney, I'm eating you. Cause that's crazy. Yeah.
Eventually, I mean, the people are at their wits' end. This pandemic has taken people over. The crime rate is going up. You know, like in certain areas, it's getting worse. I live in Los Angeles. The crime rate is certainly going up. New York, the crime rate has gone up. You know, it's just they're playing politics with people's lives, and they've always done it. But now people are up against the wall in a way that they've never been before. So go ahead, keep on with your bad selves in Washington and see what happens. Yeah.
Well, that theme continues of the poor being screwed over as we move into our next topic. So we've been covering the rollout of the vaccine nationally and especially focusing, I think rightfully so, on the corruption that's been going on in regards to that, with here in LA and other areas where there's a number of rich people, them getting sort of early access to it, or at least trying to write big checks to get it. We talked about in Florida, them setting up these pop-up clinics in areas that are extremely wealthy and that have people who donated large sums of money to Governor Ron DeSantis. Well, now we have issues in LA as well. So you will be shocked to find out that as of right now, deep inequities have emerged in vaccine administration in California, with white and Asian residents in affluent areas being inoculated at much higher rates than black and Latino people in poorer areas. That is a bad thing, but that's not the bad thing we're focusing on here. What we're focusing on is, because of that, a program was set up to try to fix a bit of this. So for people who would qualify to get a vaccine, but might be black or Latino or in some other group where it's harder to get an appointment for it, they wanted to set up this new program. And what it was gonna do was it was gonna provide special access codes that enabled people to make appointments on the MyTurn vaccine scheduling website. The codes are provided to community organizations to be distributed to people in largely black and Latino communities. They're intended to be used for people in communities of color who are otherwise also vaccine eligible, including healthcare workers and those older than 65, but who might, for a variety of reasons, have difficulty getting an appointment. But are you shocked to find out that the codes did not end up going principally to those people? They've been circulating in group texts and messages among the wealthier work from home set in Los Angeles, according to the Times. Many of those people are not yet eligible for the vaccine under state rules. So they're both not in the communities that were targeted. They're not even eligible to get a vaccine, but they're the ones that have been getting the codes. And the thing is, once you have the code, you go to the website, it doesn't say anything about this being designed for communities of color or anything like that. It's just a place where you can sign up for a code. And so somebody is handing them out for the wealthy. They're then giving it to other people. Now the state is canceling some appointments that have been made after the Times inquired about it, but we don't know how many successful appointments were carried out, how many outstanding codes might still be floating around. So in the end, this program, which was designed to fix some of the gap, is actually working to exacerbate it.
And here we go, just another Tuesday in the great United States of America. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny, I know of some people who've gotten the vaccine in the weirdest of ways. I know someone who drove their parents to get vaccinated. There was a hiccup with the line. They ended up putting them in another line and they all got vaccinated. And you know, her included. I just think that, you know, America is gonna America, and that's what America's always done to its citizens and communities of color. And when we say that we've been hated in this country and mistreated and abused, and you have those people who are telling us to get over it. You've been free for how long now? You know, slavery is over, but is it really? Like, this is just because you took the shackles off, the fact that people and communities of color who have been showing up for these essential jobs during this pandemic to service their fellow citizens, and because they have to maintain, you know, anyway, their jobs so that they can survive, but they still have shown up because some people decided not to show up. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we can't properly service our healthcare workers, it's just, you know, it's just out of control in this country. And those of you who call me a communist, which I am not, if I was, I would proudly say I am a communist because I ain't scared of y'all, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. But those are the people who hijack the talking points of those of us who want to create equity. And this is the moment where people who call themselves allies and say they want to be allies and have the Black Lives Matter signs up in their windows and are showing up, you know, all the right places on social media. This is how you use your privilege to help provide equality and equity for people and communities of color, is you move out of the way because you know that you're okay, and let the elderly, just like you fight for your own parents and our communities, get the vaccinations that they need. And this is why I don't fall for the allyship, the performative allyship of a lot of white people who go around speaking the talking points and they got the followers and they get on the shows and they say all the right things. But then when you go, you do a deep dive into a lot of these people, they're the ones that are doing this. And listen, white poor people too get ignored a lot in this. And even though some of them may hate me because I'm a brown woman, there's a lot of people who just get disserviced in this country, and they show up for work every day. So I'm not surprised that any of this is happening. I just think that it's funny that we get to read about it, we've become desensitized to it, and then we just go about our business and it just goes unchecked.
Yeah. Well, hopefully with the media investigation of this, they'll, I don't know, check when people use the codes. I mean, the gap exists, so something has to be done. But clearly, like you cannot be shocked that there's corruption with these vaccines. Like, sure, there's like a third of the country that wants nothing to do with the vaccine, but there's also at least a third of the country that would do literally anything to get it right now. And it's very hard to get. And so when you give people like control over its distribution, it's just, it's gonna be so corrupt. And so you have to have people watching other people and people watching those first people too. Anyway, what's that?
It's exhausting. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, all of it is just connected, right? It's like we've devolved, and as advanced as we think that we are, and as pompous as we are to think that we are the greatest country in the world because we think we have these alleged freedoms that they continuously tell us we have, but anytime we try to exercise, they squash us for it. It's just mm-hmm. exhausting to constantly have to be reminded that you're less than in this country when it comes to even the most basic of things.
Yeah, 100%. Meghan McCain is frustrated with Dr. Fauci, the rollout of the vaccine, and I get it. I'm frustrated with a lot of different aspects of the rollout of the vaccine, but not necessarily for the same reasons that she is. So I wanna show a little bit from her commentary yesterday on her show about what she thinks about what's going on.
In Israel and Tel Aviv, one of the messages that they have, I saw a sign that said, get a shot, take a shot. Meaning if I get the vaccine, then I can go out and I can have shots with my friends. Is the science in Israel different than the science here in the United States of America? Because Israel has over half of their country vaccinated already and seem to be doing pretty well. The idea that I can get vaccinated and I won't be able to see friends and nothing in life changes and that we're gonna have to wear masks forever. I don't understand the downplaying of getting the vaccine because right now we should be wanting as many Americans as possible to get a vaccine. The fact that I, Meghan McCain, co-host of The View, I don't know when or how I will be able to get a vaccine because the rollout for my age range and my health is so nebulous. I have no idea when and how I can get it. I want to get it. If you call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I will go any place at any time to get it. I want to be responsible and obviously wait my turn. But this rollout has been a disaster. And I understand, obviously, President Trump can take much of the blame. But now we're in the Biden administration. I, for one, would like something to look forward to and to hope for, because if getting the vaccine means that just nothing changes and we have to wait another few years till everyone gets it. There's already a lot of people not getting it. We're already having a messaging problem getting people to take this vaccine. So I'm over Dr. Fauci. I think we need to have more people giving more opinions. And I honestly, quite frankly, I think the Biden administration should remove him and put someone else in place that maybe does understand science or can talk to other countries about how we can be more like these places that are doing this successfully.
I mean, this is what you get when you have Meghan McCain on the show. Look, there's a lot there, Ida. I need to organize my thoughts. What did you think about what? So her name's Meghan McCain. Someone asked in the chat, wait, isn't her father famous?
Yeah. Yes,
she is quick to point out her father is quite famous. Anyway, what did you think about that?
So Karens will Karen. That's what Karens do. I think it's very interesting. You know, people online have had this whole thing going about how people from TYT, actually the followers, the Twitch people saying, we would love to see Ida on The View so that she could shut Meghan McCain down, right? That's the thing happening on Twitter right now. You know, it's funny. Tone deaf, if I've ever heard tone deaf. Privilege, if I've ever heard privilege. You know, elitism, if I've ever heard elitism. It's just, but it's constant, right? So I don't understand what's going on. I think The View loves this because they continue to stay to trend every day. We have a conversation about this unhinged person. And when you think about The View, I think it was George Bernard Shaw. And if it's not, don't attack me. Just tell me who it was who said, yeah, a tyranny is a family ruled by its sickest member. And I think that that's the case with The View. I think she is the sickest member and she rules with terror. And I think people have, you know, normalized this behavior from this white woman who really believes that things should be better for her because she is a white woman. She is the daughter of a successful politician. And she's on television every day and she is who she is. So why does she have to struggle with the things that the regular people in this country have to struggle with? The ones who make sure that they, you know, have our groceries and cook our food and clean our streets and maintain the buildings that our children are educated in and are the ones that carry our luggage at the airport. She's more important than those people because she is on The View. And so she does go unchecked, because I think that it is hard to check someone when you are beholden to a contract and a television network. So I choose to do it here. I think Megan is disconnected. She's hypocritical. She jumps on the sides of things when they only when they affect her as a human being, which speaks to her self-centeredness and her narcissism. And I think she's sick. Above all things, she is sick. And that is why she's always ruling Twitter with the hashtag, because she's always speaking to her illness of racism, you know, xenophobia. All of it combined. She is the embodiment of what they stand for, and she really stands on her privilege. And so then people are shocked every time Meghan McCain does something that Meghan McCain does, when that's all Meghan McCain does.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not shocked. I'm just tired. I'm like, girl, bye. Go sit down. Go feed your baby. Go do something productive with your time and stop speaking on behalf of the American people. But what I'm happy about is that now she is finally speaking on just behalf of herself, which is all she thinks about all the time anyway. She's so self-centered. I, Meghan McCain, co-host of The View, should have. And then you have people, you know, I just don't understand.
I think she started to realize what she was saying and sort of backed off when she was like, I'm co-host of The View and I don't know when I'm getting it. Like, wait, but are you saying you should get first access because you host a daytime TV show? If that's what you really think, feel free to say that. I don't think that because we have YouTube channels, we should get first access to it. Like, I think leave that for the TikTok kids. They're cool. We're not. They get it first. We don't. No, it's right. it's crazy. And that's the line in her little thing that got a lot of the attention. I don't even think that's the worst thing. She wants Fauci to be fired because he's not being optimistic enough in comparison to her interpretation of Israeli vaccine science. I'm gonna guess that she probably hasn't done a ton of research into it. For her to say,
but the number of people that are in Israel versus the number of people in the United States of America.
Wait, are you saying it's not the same? It's not the same number of people in Israel or there?
She's like, you know, I flew in a helicopter in Israel, and I'm like, people don't realize that the population is very different. We have a lot more people, so of course. But the other thing is, this is the thing, John, and I just want to say this here because I was talking about it yesterday and it is very irritating. The dumbing down of America has become so severe, right? Because I remember there was a time where people were upset that Latifah had a CoverGirl contract because that's for models. And now Beyonce is booking television roles because that's for actors. But now we have privileged actors and people who are children of celebrities running the conversation on political and social issues based on this elite, you know, system that has nothing to do with people who are properly informed and educated enough to have these conversations. So now every day we're having conversations about what people on The View have to say about politics when there are journalists who are specialists in research and have studied this, who have the opportunity, should have the opportunity to be speaking on these things. And now every day we are listening to these celebrities. I include myself in this. I'm a stand-up comedian. I only speak on my opinion on these things because I'm not a scientist, I'm not a journalist, and I respect the people who show up for that every day because I'm gonna go do my comedy. But the fact that we are listening to these people, Sunny is the only one on that show. Sunny is the only one, and Anna, when she's on there, because Anna is actually a politician that have the background to really have these conversations. And we're letting this petulant, spoiled brat have a conversation every day about what should be happening with regards to political, legal, and economic situations and systems that affect the everyday person in this country who can in no way relate to her life and her lifestyle. It's ridiculous.
Ida, So I haven't revealed my secret reason for doing this segment. And I'm worried now that you won't think it's a good enough reason. I'm just hoping that if this becomes a big enough story, Aidy Bryant will play the Princess of Arizona on SNL again this weekend. Is that not a good enough reason?
I'm with you.
Aidy, please.
I love her.
Anyway, that was awesome. Couldn't agree more. And with that, let's move on to the results I think we have of our vaccine poll. And let's see current state of the Dragon Squad. What are their expectations for the rollout of this vaccine? Let's see. Okay. 23% say already vaccinated. That is higher than I would have expected. That's higher than the percentage at large in the US. I mean, we also have international viewers, so maybe they're more likely. Maybe it's an overrepresented Israeli sample in the audience. I don't know. But glad to see that almost a quarter of you have been vaccinated. Very few, 8% think it'll happen within a month. Twice as many think within 3 months. About a third of you think it'll take up to 6 months. And a quarter of you think within a year. So it's a very even distribution. We are all over the map. The only takeaway I'm really impressed with is how many have already been vaccinated. That is a great thing. Very glad to see that. So thank you for everyone who took part in that poll. We're gonna be doing more going forward. And I want to say thank you to Ida for joining us as always. Where can people see more of your work? You were talking beforehand about they might be able to see it around the country at some point in the near future, right?
Yeah, I'm going on the road. I will be in Miami on March 4th at the Urban. I'll be at the Blue Note in Hawaii on March 14th. And then I will be in Minnesota at the House of Comedy the 18th through the 20th. And then back in Phoenix, Arizona on March 24th. Mind you, I want to warn people that these are comedy shows. I'm going out to work on my special, which I'm taping in June. I will not be selling merchandise. I will not be doing meet and greets. No offense to anyone. I don't want to be a risk to anyone as much as I don't want them to be one to me. I will be flying on airplanes. I do have people who are older that come see me at shows. And I would hate to be walk around with the belief and knowing that I got someone sick.
Yeah.
So, it'll just be strictly comedy shows. There will be no interaction after the shows. I'll actually be ushered out and straight out of the building because I just don't want to be responsible for anyone getting sick. I think about that a lot. And so, but I hope you come out to the shows. The tickets are on my Instagram at FunnyAIDA in the ticket link. And then of course you can catch me on Fridays on Truth Serum at 12 p.m. Awesome. Ticket link. The link is also you. I'm on Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube.
Awesome. No, I think that's 100% the responsible thing to do. I can't imagine anyone in the audience is gonna have a problem with that. And it's very exciting. Glad to see that. And thank you as always for joining us. Always glad to have you on. We know that millions of Americans believe in some form of the QAnon conspiracy theory, and that means that there are millions of families and social groups that are dealing with a person that they love and care about suddenly believing things that seem kind of insane. So what's that like for them? How are they dealing with that? Well, we're very lucky to be joined once again by the senior tech reporter for HuffPost, Jesselyn Cook, who's written about this topic recently. Jesselyn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very glad to have you here. So you have an article, I Miss My Mom, talking to the children of QAnon believers. So there's a lot that I want to get into, but what made you want to try to get this sort of side on it, the approach of talking to the family members, understanding their struggle?
There's been a lot of really important and impressive reporting surrounding the QAnon phenomenon lately, but I felt like the voices that are missing from that coverage a lot of the times are the voices of the family members who are dealing with QAnon disinformation every single day in really horrific ways. And a lot of them are suffering in silence without really having anyone to talk to because there's so much shame and embarrassment surrounding these conspiracy theories, especially when it's a parent or a loved one who's gone down that rabbit hole. So I just wanted to reach out to some of these people and see how they're doing.
So I assume, you know, QAnon's a very online sort of conspiracy theory. There's, you know, forums and Instagram accounts, or at least on a lot of these platforms, there were things like that. Maybe they've been banned. Are there support groups online for family members? Is there a subreddit for family members of QAnon believers?
Yeah, there is one subreddit that kind of blew up in popularity over the pandemic when so many Americans and people elsewhere got into the conspiracy theory. So the subreddit is called QAnon Casualties, and it's just a place where loved ones, friends, family members, spouses of QAnon believers can come together and vent and commiserate and just kind of share the experience.
So overall, you talked to a number of people. What are some of the trends that you saw in terms of shared experiences across different individuals?
A lot of people just said they feel very, very lonely, because if your friend asks you, how are you doing? It's hard to say, well, I'm fine, except my mom thinks Hillary Clinton eats babies. Like, it's something that's so embarrassing that it can be hard to talk to about with someone who isn't familiar with the conspiracy theory. So a lot of people telling me they were lonely, and I thought it would be hard to find sources who were willing to talk about this, but so many of them seemed elated to just have someone to talk to at length about this, especially since I'm a stranger and I'm already versed in this stuff. So that was something I noticed a lot of, and just feeling the sense of, it's just bleak. Like, so many of them said they've tried everything they could to try to help their mom or their dad, different de-radicalization strategies, and nothing has worked. It seems the more they try to help, the further they push their parent into the rabbit hole.
Oh, geez. Were there any success stories of maybe not fully getting them out of it, but getting them to start to question it, or maybe like base their lives a little bit less around these conspiracy theories?
Sadly, no, not. I talked to 9 children of QAnon believers, and none of them have had any luck. And that seems to be the trend more broadly. Although I have heard a few success stories. Some people who were into QAnon were expecting Joe Biden's inauguration to be the Great Awakening, as they refer to it, which is this apocalyptic event where all of Joe Biden's deep state cronies would be hauled away and arrested. And when that didn't happen, that was a wake up call for some people who realized, okay, this is one giant hoax that I've fallen into. I should probably step away and try to find my way back to my family. But wow, for a lot of people, they just doubled down and moved the goalposts.
So that great awakening that you talked about is a very core part of this. I'm curious, of the family members of people who believe in QAnon, how many know of the Great Awakening and actually like they really want those firing squads, the mass arrests and all of that? Like, I'm trying to get an idea of the breakdown of people who maybe they believe that kids are being abducted, but they don't necessarily believe it's Joe Biden. Maybe they believe that there's pedophilia, but it's not drinking hormones. Like, how extreme on average did these QAnon followers tend to be? Did they buy into the whole thing?
Yeah, the children of QAnon believers who I spoke to, most of their parents are really deep into it, believing some of the most horrific and specific conspiracy theories. But I think looking at the number of people in this country who are on that path and kind of as you described, thinking, there is probably a lot of pedophilia and there is reason to be suspicious of this and that, not quite to the level of expecting a great awakening and mass executions, but on that path, I think is really staggering and at numbers we don't fully understand yet.
Wow. Were there people who found a way to just not engage on it? Like, I think that the difficulty might be that people who believe in QAnon aren't just like, oh, that's a belief I have. They tend to like, that becomes who they are. Were there people who found that they could just not talk about those things and maintain some semblance of a relationship with their loved one?
Yeah, a couple of the people I spoke to said that that was the only way they could maintain a relationship with their mom or their dad, is they just don't talk politics, they don't talk conspiracy theories. Some of them said their conversations now are about like pets and the weather. So it's really sad that it's had to get to that level. But with QAnon, really no topic is safe. It seems like everything can be tied into the conspiracy theory. And so it's causing a huge strain on relationships all over the country.
And one other thing I want to know, the people who have gotten into QAnon of the family members that you've talked to, did they tend on average to be people who already had believed other conspiracy theories, that they were predisposed to believing conspiracy theories, or were they sort of coming into this relatively clean of that way of thinking?
That's the scary thing. A lot of these people, most of the people I spoke to, their family members or mothers or fathers had no conspiratorial beliefs prior to QAnon. Some of them were liberals who had like voted for Obama. And it was just, even in the past year, as the pandemic, we saw this disinformation flying around, they just fell deep into this. And it's like their whole personality has just done a 180.
Yeah. Definitely in a lot of the write-ups that I've seen, the pandemic has been seen as a big accelerator of this. Did you gain any reason to believe that perhaps as things go back to normal, maybe whatever effect it is that the pandemic or the quarantines or the economic problems are having, that some people, it might just be a way of processing anxiety in a chaotic world? Or do you think that it's become a sort of more durable thing that the vaccine isn't going to be able to cure?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we will see people shift away from this. I think part of it is just we're all spending too much time online, and that's where conspiracy theories are waiting for us so often. But I do think QAnon is something we're going to be dealing with for years. And even you mentioned the vaccine, a lot of QAnon believers are not going to take the vaccine because they believe there's a microchip in it. So it's something that we're going to be trying to figure out for a while.
Wow. Well, everyone watching this, the write-up is fascinating. So definitely go take a look over at HuffPost and you can read all about it. We've just barely scratched the surface for the interviews that Jesslyn did. But as always, we appreciate you joining us. Very, very much value your work.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.